Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing very well, and like to talk a little bit about some labels and coalitions and who are the people who are ganging up on the president?
Yeah.
You know, and that sometimes is hard to figure out, but the coalitions are important, and you know, I've talked a lot about the excessive bipartisanship, even though they're fighting all the time. But you know, last week we talked about, and the big story was, you know, four of our military personnel were killed and three wounded in a suicide attack in Syria. And of course, this followed the fact that Trump says we're leaving, which we praise him, get out, and then all of a sudden you heard from two groups. Our voices were not that loud because we were saying, well, if you'd have never been there, they wouldn't have been killed, and get out fast as you can. And then yet there were others who say, see, we told you, they're still there. Al-Qaeda is still going to run the world, and we're threatened. Our security is threatened, and therefore we shouldn't do it. So it's the factions that come together and they argue over the policy. But the newest thing that's that we want to talk about has to do with Phil Giraldi's article talking about, you know, the bipartisanship and coming together in opposing Trump, the hatred of Trump. And this has been developing. It's monetary, it's philosophic. And right now, I guess the biggest picture here, the theme of his article was the coalescing of, you know, the neocons and the progressives and Democrats, you know, coming over. All of a sudden, yeah, you know, they're the hawks. They're more hawkish than the Republicans. So they're very arbitrary, anything that fits their agenda. And some do it for one reason. Some do it just because they love war to accomplish what they want. And others do it because they like progressive ideas. But the progressives are coming together, and the Democrats have changed their tune. And then you have this factor sitting out there, anything to destroy Trump.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a good article to read. It was in the UNS review, and somebody, you know, want to follow up on it. It's a good article to follow up on.
Yeah, it was originally in the American Herald Tribune, which publishes a lot of good pieces, and UNS reprinted it. But it's a helpful article, and Giraldi, I think, knows a lot about the neocons, and it's helpful to see what happened. And he points out that the original neocons started in the 1930s, and it was basically just a bunch of students at the City College of New York sitting around the cafeteria. They were all followers of Trotsky. They were Trotskyites. They were definitely on the left. And their main philosophical view was a continuous, permanent global revolution led by a vanguard party. This is what Trotsky believed in. That was his break with Stalin, who didn't believe in continuous revolution. And they transformed into sort of liberal hawks and pushing the U.S. to be that vanguard party, using force to promote the change overseas that they would like to see happen.
So, you know, when we look at the groups that line up, that tells us a lot, too, because we find in this incident that we're talking about, all of a sudden, the Center for American Progress, which is a Hillary Clinton group,
yeah.
Nobody seems to be investigating her, so she must be clean.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
The Republicans are in charge, but nobody touches her. But anyway, she's aligned herself with the American Economic Journal,
yeah.
You know, and one is neocon, and the other is liberal Democrats who are progressive as well. But they're all against Trump, but they're unified because of the hatred toward Trump and their narrow agenda.
Yeah, indeed. And actually, it's the American Enterprise Institute. It's even worse that they're with. That was Bolton's old organization. You got Hillary and Bolton's organization. Well, Bolton himself is the president's national security advisor. So, and I think what Phil is talking about, and that's why we use the word chameleon, they start out on the left as Trotskyites. And then certainly in the 70s, they opposed McGovern and the anti-war on the left, the anti-war movement. So they became Scoop Jackson Democrats, very hawkish senator Democrats. And then they moved into the Reagan coalition. They moved into the Reagan administration. They populated things like the National Endowment for Democracy. All of the U.S. government's regime change, mechanisms in the government. And then they became Bill Clintonites.
Right.
And then they probably, and this is what Phil writes, they really reached the apex of their strength in the George W. Bush administration, where they literally controlled the Pentagon, State Department, and everything else.
I frequently accused the Congress being run in a bipartisan way for the big stuff, you know, foreign policy and spending bills, and they get together. But I think it's not quite that simple. That needs to be clarified a little bit. It isn't just Republicans are here and Democrats are here and we'll trade off and we'll get along and get together. There's a lot of animosity, and they do that for practical reasons. But I think they're almost like the puppets who are running the world, the deep state. And they're probably closer to being nonpartisan, but they're very partisan at times. You know, they change their tune and they're chameleons. They go back and forth, and now they'll help Republicans, they'll help Democrats. So it's not so much that there's two neat political groups, because we're actually pointing out where the Democrats are just changing their tune, and Republicans, you know, are conservatives, fiscal conservatives, but it doesn't seem like we ever reduce any spending with the Republicans. It goes on and on. So it's a mixed bag, but I don't think it's just sloppiness. I think it's pretty deliberate to keep the people guessing, because they also have a lot of factions that they have to deal with. A lot of different people have influence in the government.
And we talk about it a lot, that Trump has mixed a lot of things up, and he's changed a lot of alliances and coalitions. And really, the neocons is one of the big things that he's mixed up, because on the campaign trail, he was saying things that were anathema to neocons. Let's not forget, a lot of them are funded by the military-industrial complex, but he talks about getting out of NATO, getting along with Russia. They need a big Cold War with Russia, because that's what fed their, you know, their desire for dollars through the 80s. These things are anathema, so the neocons came out strong against Trump, as we know, and strongly for Hillary. And now you have a very strange thing we talked about before the show, where you have some neocons that are with Trump and some neocons that are not only with Hillary, but moving even closer toward Hillary. So everything is kind of confused. I guess you could say it's kind of a Lenin thing. If you want to control the opposition, be the opposition. So they, part of them are with Trump and part of them are against him.
You know, there's a lot of things going on here, and some of it's just for power and money and oil and different things like that. But probably the most obnoxious thing that is being done, which is done constantly over the ages, and that is that war is deliberately used as a tool. And those are more so the neocons. We have to have the war going on there. And all we have to do is think about our program yesterday, talking about Martin Luther King or talking about Kennedy. You can lose your life over becoming anti-war. Yeah. And this is something that it has to be molded into this whole philosophy. But there's a lot of other tools that they use. And many times, all that we're talking about, in order to sell it to the people, they have to be on the moral high ground. They're doing the Lord's work, and they're working for peace and prosperity. Just listen to some of Pompeo's speeches. They're just terrible.
Force for good.
and also the issue of patriotism. You can't argue, people say you're being unpatriotic, and they just sort of demolish the people that are trying to do something. You're a patriot, and you're for the war, and you're for fighting, and you're for the troops, and all this. And so it is a big battle, but it's also fed into the electorate, you know, with the mainstream media. So you have both parties sort of working together or being controlled from the outside. Then you have the media. I can't think of any time when the media really strongly resisted going to war. Sometimes they get fed up and barely, you know, at the end for Vietnam, you know, but they're never, they never take that position. So war is a big issue, and the media is closely connected to the military-industrial complex, and lo and behold, you have a lot of retired military figures make a few bucks, you know, giving us the gospel truth about what the military is all about.
And that's a great point about the media, because you see, and Phil writes about this, you see the big shots in the neocon movement, Max Boot, Bill Kristol, they move seamlessly from Fox News over to MSNBC, you know, saying the same things. And this is this transition toward Democrats. But you mentioned slogans earlier, and that, I think that's an important thing, too, because I wrote this down separately as we were taking notes. Meaningless slogans was my note, and that's what the neocons use, strong national defense. They always say that. So if you're somehow against all of their adventurism, well, you're not for a strong national defense. But what you've always argued, and we try to argue on this show, is that spreading the military into hundreds of countries across the world with a $1 trillion budget, that is not defending us. That is making us weak, not strong.
They fail to recognize that there's a difference between militarism and defense. Anytime you spend money on the DOD budget, you're defending the country, which is wrong. You're just spending more money in the military, and it's militarism, and it's the people making profits off the whole thing. The another interesting thing that's pointed out in this article is the coming together of some of the progressives. There'll be Crystal's warmongering, aggressive nature to be opposed to Trump because he doesn't trust him. And then also the social progressives, you know, the cultural Marxism, the people where this money comes from are more in that category. But they might not be exactly the same, but it's still down with Trump and down with conservatives, down with family values, yeah, and this sort of thing. They're unified. And this is something that we have to contend with. But there is a strong coalition, because some of the cultural Marxists aren't necessarily as hawkish as Crystal is.
Yeah.
But they get along fine.
They've made common cause. And this goes to the sort of the main point of the article, which is that here you have the Weekly Standard, the flagship publication of neoconservatism since it was founded, I think, by Murdoch in the, what, 90s, early 90s? So this flagship of neoconservatism has sunk, you know. It sunk a few weeks ago, and it hadn't even reached the bottom of the ocean yet, to continue the metaphor, when they were bailed out by none other than Pierre Amadiar, the very left-wing, very progressive, liberal billionaire, one of the founders of eBay, yeah, I think, yeah, it was. He gave him $600,000, and now Bill Kristol's back afloat with the bulwark, doing the same thing, but with left money. So it's amazing.
And then you go and they get a lot of money from Bloomberg and Soros too.
Yeah.
And they might be more social progressives, you know, but they all have an agenda. But there's another element besides the media, because ultimately it's the people whose ideology that they have, and that's very important. Then you have to look to the universities.
Yeah.
So unless somebody gets some information outside the universities, do you think they're going to get a decent understanding of foreign policy? That's one of the reasons I have a little program called the Ron Paul Curriculum, to let young people learn that there's a different perspective on history and foreign policy. But that they're very powerful, because I think of it and thought of it so often when I was in Washington, and I talk to other members philosophically when it's quiet and it's just a conversation. And the truth is some people might challenge me on that. I think most of them are there. They go at least with very good intentions. Mm-hmm. They want to do what's right. But they're also following what they were taught about economics. I mean, how many would come? I bet you didn't meet very many congressmen or even staffers who came with an understanding of, you know, one of the facilitators of all this nonsense we have is the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
I mean, they were taught something else, and that's old-fashioned, and you'd be ridiculed if you bring that up. So that's an important element. So ultimately, although I do a lot of this type of programming and been in politics, I really believe that ultimately we win the battle when we change people's minds, and still it's an educational obligation that we have.
And speaking of education, you talk about, that's absolutely right. There was not an understanding about audit the Fed or the Fed or anything before then. But what happened, political pressure was building because of your work and your legislation. And as much as they didn't want to, they couldn't stand it, they had to stand up and start looking at it and thinking about it, you know, because of the calls they were getting. So that's what we're trying to do, is continue this political pressure. I would just close on the same theme about the neocons returning to the Democratic Party, returning to the left that they started from. And Phil points out recent polling show that Democrats are far more hawkish on foreign policy than Republicans these days. They're going toward war, and Republican voters are simply not there. The Democrats oppose getting out of Syria, oppose getting out of Afghanistan. They're moving to become really the war party. The question is, what will Republicans do? And we've looked at some votes early on, and we see a real split among Republicans now. We see more Republicans than we would suspect going toward easing sanctions on Russia and these sorts of things. So how will the Republican Party respond to the fact that the Democratic Party has become the war party? Will it be smart and rethink things and understand that a strong America has to do with America that protects its own self, protects its own values, a defensive America rather than a global Trotskyite permanent revolution America? Let's hope they take the hint.
Very good. And I'd like to close with making a point that the philosophic issue that's at hand is, how do we bring about change? Do we bring about change by violence? There's a move on New World Order and one government and open borders. And yet that could be achieved in two different ways, with guns and authoritarianism and dictators. Or if you had free trade and sound money, there would be a lot of a new order, but it would all be voluntary. The enemy that we have to put up with is an enemy that endorses the use of violence. And socialism is the use of violence. But they would be aghast if they were being accused of using violence. But they are so pro-gun that they couldn't exist without government guns. And it's also the reason they want to take the guns away from the people who defend against them. So the people aren't allowed to own guns. The government owns the guns. They control the government. And then they can do anything they want because, they come in, they send the IRS agents and different people to come in and control your property and your wealth in order to pursue their agenda. So it's a use of violence. It's the principle of authoritarianism versus voluntarism. So the goals may be the same, a peaceful world and achieve that. But a lot of that in trade and all can be achieved, in a world order where things come together and they're peaceful, but it has to be voluntarism. And the whole issue of government's use of authoritarian force and use of guns to have their way and put bad people in government, because they can't exist. They can't exist by, trying to influence people by explaining their position. No, they frighten people, and then they come down with the use of force and say, we have to go to war, or we have to rob this group to take care of this group. They never talk about personal liberty, and that's what I intend to continue to do. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Soon.